This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley. Broadcasting live from the Rudy Luther Toyota studios at AM 950, it's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Good to be with you today. Matt Patrick here. Of course, Sven Sundgaard joining us in his usual spot here at 5:30. Nice to have him on board. We'll talk a little bit. This could end up being one of the warmest beginnings of October ever. And I went and walked the dog this morning. It was like 64 degrees on October 7th. Please, that's weird. Patrick, as it always does happen in this industry, the second I start promoting an interview later in the week, that interview ain't going to happen. I was going to have Ryan Winkler on, who has announced that he's going to run for Hennepin County Attorney. And that didn't work out. We'll try to get him on in some other day. I said we're going to have him, and no. So there it is. So hopefully we'll have him on before too long here. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Hopefully, we'll see.
We'll cross our fingers. We'll
cross our fingers. I went out this afternoon, Patrick. Have you been outside at all? It is warm. It's cloudy, but it's warm out outside.
Well, yesterday I had to do a little bit of physical labor regarding one of my other jobs that I participate in, and I'm like, I'm sweating. It is very hot in this gymnasium for this volleyball broadcast. I don't like this.
Well. Stop. I wanted to stop. I did get out myself. I went and hiked Tierney Woods, which is down in Bloomington. That's right, in Bloomington. I was out in your woods. Hello there, roaming around. Tierney Woods is actually quite nice. It's not the biggest park, but it's okay. Here is my observation about leaves. Now, it is October 7th. One of the things about leaves, and this is the kind of thing I've paid attention to, because I love October. It's my favorite month of the year. It absolutely is. It's just wonderful. By now, most of the trees should be changing color. Now, I'm not saying they should be dropping their leaves, but you should have a lot of, you know, going out in the woods and having lots of yellows and oranges and reds. You kind of were in that window now. What I have seen through the hikes on the parks that I have done is that there were, first of all, some trees that changed really early, like the 10th, 15th of September. Those trees have already dropped all their leaves. Some trees have changed and look very nice. I've found a few of them out there. But there's a lot of trees that the ones that look nice, the ones with the oranges and the reds and the deep yellows, that are pretty much almost empty of leaves already. I mean, there's a lot of them are already fallen. And what I saw today when I was hiking through Tierney Woods, there's a lot of trees that are kind of going yellowish, but they're also, you can kind of tell they're just going straight to brown after that. It's not really pretty. It's not that bright yellow that you get. It's kind of this kind of diminished yellow. And then all of a sudden, there was a big old oak tree I was there, I saw. And yeah, it was like, you know, usually oaks give you some nice color, and they just were just falling, you know, either yellow or falling. And it wasn't really, didn't really look that nice. A little red in there, but not much. A lot of trees are still green. That's the part which I can't quite fathom. I've got a neighbor who has a tree that was always the last tree to drop leaves. I mean, always has been. I mean, it's, you know, usually the leaves start falling right around the 30th of October. And thankfully, this town I have has leaf pickup until mid-November, so I'm able to kind of get those up and get them bagged up and get them out. But, I, you know, at this point, I can't – it is really remarkable how many trees are still green. I'd say half the trees in the woods are still green. It's weird. It's I said this before. It's kind of like coming in stages this year. Last year was absolutely stunning. This year, it's coming in stages. And it doesn't seem to be great because – October, you should have, you know, by now you should start seeing the real reds and the oranges and the yellows. By the time you get to the end of the month, you get those beautiful, rich browns. And right now, I'm not seeing anything that looks normal on this year. It really doesn't. I'm not saying there aren't some places that have had some nice leaves. When I was out apple picking this last weekend, I went past a few groves of trees, which are just stunning, just beautiful. Absolutely. So there are some places that are getting some nice leaves, but it's just, it doesn't seem to be real consistent. I'm going to talk to Sven about this a little bit when we talk with him a little bit later on, find out if he's got any thoughts on why that's happening. Also, some other weather news we'll get to with him as well. But let's get into a very rich and deep and somewhat depressing coronavirus update for today. We need to go through this all. A lot of news coming through today. First of all, the latest update, the COVID-19 numbers from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,674 new cases, 32 newly reported deaths. 18 were of those 32 were in October. 13 of those actually were credited in September, and one actually happened in March. The state's death toll now is 8,275 since the start of the pandemic. As of October 4th, the state reported that 3,414,238 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine, while 3,244,531 people have completed the vaccine series. Through October 6th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 881. That's up from 864 the day before. Of those hospitalized, 234 people now are in the ICU. Wow, that number's up dramatically. 234 people are in the ICU, 647 are in general hospital care. The 2,674 positive results in Thursday's update were from 41,931 completed tests, creating a positivity rate of 6.37. According to John Hopkins, Minnesota's test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 9.10. I mentioned this yesterday. We're at the 11th worst state right now for coronavirus. Now, granted, when you look at how bad things got in some states, Florida, Missouri, I mean, you know, they're still getting a lot of cases there, but it's looking better because of the fact that they don't have nearly the caseload that they had. So it's a little bit skewed, but at the same time, Minnesota, you can't deny, Minnesota's had a hard time here. And once again, I want to make sure we understand this. This is the personal responsibility crowd. The people who say, you don't put any regulations in place. Don't say anything. And let us live our lives. And you'll see, we'll be perfectly safe. And then some idiots go on out there sick as a dog and, you know, cough on a whole bunch of people. And next thing you know, even people with that's been vaccinated are getting sick. It's just ugly. Also, COVID-19 case rates increased in 59 of 87 Minnesota counties in the weekly statewide report released Thursday by the health department. County cases are based on the number of confirmed cases in a week per 10,000 people, with the latest report representing case rates for September 19th through the 25th. For context, anything over 10 is a signal there is widespread community transmission. So basically, if you get 10 out of 10,000, then, okay, you've got some issues. Keep that in mind in a sec here, okay? Last Thursday's weekly update saw the week-over-week increase rates from 74 to 87 counties, but fewer counties showing increases than the latest report, encouraging, it doesn't tell the whole story, as there are now 66 counties with at least 30 cases per 10,000 residents. Remember, 10 is the threshold that you've got widespread, you know, transmission. 10. We have 66 of our counties with 30 or higher. A week ago, there were 54 counties at the 30-plus level. There are also now 44 counties with case rates above 40 per 10,000, which is up from 21 counties a week ago. What's more is there are now 20 counties in the 50-plus level compared to 14 such counties in last week's report. Just 3 weeks ago, the highest case rates in the U.S. was in the state, rather. The highest case rate in the state was 53.8%. Now, first of all, I bet you can figure out the theme here of where exactly most of these counties are located. That's right, outstate Minnesota. Republican districts where Republicans have downplayed the importance of the vaccine, downplayed the importance of masks, out in rural Minnesota, that's where you are seeing a shocking amount of case increase. It's no other way to say it. The Republicans basically seem to be trying to kill their own constituents. That's the only way you can say it at this point. Let's run the counties. 20 highest county rates in the greater Minnesota. Now, as I say this, two things I want to remind you of from earlier in the story. 3 weeks ago, the highest case rate in the state was 53.8%. That was 3 weeks ago. 53.8. And 10 out of 10,000, 10 is considered to be the threshold for widespread contagions of coronavirus. 10. Clearwater County, 129.4 cases per 10,000 people. Holy crud. My God. By far the worst state in the county in the state, Clearwater County. Monument County, 90.8. Wadena, 88. Becker, 76.1. Yellow Medicine, 70.9. Beltrami, 70.5. Traverse County, 68.9. Red Lake County is at 64.9. Redwood County is at 62.6. Marshall County is at 57.5. Todd County is at 56.9. Coochaching County is at 55.4. Martin County is at 55.1. Cass County is at 54.4. Lincoln County is at 54.3. Lake County is at, 15 counties. I'm going to stop right there. Lincoln County is the 15th county I just named, 54.3. Every one of those counties is now well above, and in the one case, over twice as bad as the worst county was 3 weeks ago. All these counties are bad. And by the way, if you notice the theme there, not a lot of metro area counties there, are there? Lake County is at 53.0. Benton County is at 52.8. Hubbard County, 52.7. Steele County, 51.8. And Crow Wing County coming in at number 20 at 51.5. And a reminder, 10 is where you consider to have a massive spread within the community. 10, not 120 plus. Case rates. Now, I know, we all know. Oh, Matt, come on, tell the whole story. I guarantee you. This is me being a Republican. I guarantee you the metro area is 1,000 times worse. It is. Case rates in the 7-county Twin Cities metro area remain mostly stable, but also indicate widespread community transmission and ongoing, not just at levels seen in aforementioned greater Twin City Minnesota counties. Scott County, let's see, who is the worst of the seven? Oh, that would be Anoka County, the most Republican county in the metro area. The most Republican county in the metro area, Anoka, that's at 33.5. Still well below that 50 rate that we were at with the other counties. The next county online would be, is it Carver? Carver, probably the second most conservative county in the metro area, Carver County, 28.7. Then we're to Scott County, 27.8. Washington County, 22.7. Dakota County, 21.2. Hennepin County is at 19.8. And Ramsey County is at 17.3. All those, by the way, are increases too as well. Only six counties have an infection rate under 20. And reminder, 10 still is the threshold. That 10 or higher is bad. We only have six counties under the rate of 20, including the state's two most populous counties and also among the most vaccinated counties, Hennepin and Ramsey. But that would be called proof. I know. That would be called proof. But yeah, Republicans, heaven forbid, Republicans look at that. Let's give a round of applause to Cook County. Cook, nicely done. They are at 7.5. They are the only county in the entire state that's below the 10 threshold. 7.5, Cook County up in the very northeastern part of the state. Salute. Chippewa County is 12.5. Pipestone County, 14.2. Ramsey County, 17.3. Hennepin County, 19.8. And Jackson County, 19.9. Everyone else is above 20. This was predictable. This is 100% predictable, and we keep talking about it. I talk about it because no one else is, really. I mean, you know, it is disturbing to me that we can have 32 people reported dead in a day, and the entire state doesn't stop and remember that. It just, we had 40 the other day. 40 people die in one day. This is bad. And once again, this fourth wave, the entire cause of it is Republican ignorance. It is. It's Republican ignorance is the cause. And it's getting worse. And it's getting worse because even though the evidence, someone might say, the two most populous counties in the state having a high vaccination rate is probably one of the main reasons why those two counties are not on the precipice of hell in regards to coronavirus. Because, you know, that would be proof. It almost seems as if Republicans are just determined to never accept the cure. They're never to accept the cure. Unless, even if you wrapped it in a Trump label, I don't think they would accept it. This is one of the hardest things I have ever lived through. And what's hard about it is the self-intentional ignorance that we are seeing on a freaking daily basis in this state, where people are like, I ain't going to get coronavirus. It ain't real. I'm going to take my horse dewormer. Vaccines are evil. I'll never wear a face diaper ever. You're all sheep. And then they're all getting sick. They're all getting sick. And I just, what can you do? I brought this up the other day with the sports teams. There's only so much, the sports teams, they're stupid here in the Twin Cities too. There is stupid here in the Twin Cities. I think having sporting events where you have cramped, jam-packed stadiums, that's not a good idea. But, you know, God forbid we get in the way, God forbid the health and safety of the fans gets in the way of the profit margins. But the reality is that when you look at these numbers, you look at what the heck's going on out there, this is just ignorance. It's conservative Republican ignorance. And I got some thoughts on that a little bit later on, but let's take a break. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. The school update is coming. I cannot give you a list of the schools, though, for an insanely depressing reason. You can probably figure that out. We'll come back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Well, the latest numbers on the schools are in, and latest weekly report from the Minnesota Department of Health shows that COVID-19 cases continue to spike among the state's school staff and student populations. Preliminary figures show that in the 7 days up to October 2nd, an additional 2,406 cases of COVID-19 were reported among pre-K through 12 students or school employees. That's up from 2,248 cases reported the week before. Of the new cases, 2,081 were among students compared to 1,918 new cases last week, and 325 were among staff. Last week, there were 330 new cases among staff. There are also 7 staff members and 7 students hospitalized with COVID over the most recent 7-day period, and 4 staff members have entered the ICU. One school staff member has also died from the virus over that 7-day period, bringing the total number of school staff deaths during the pandemic in Minnesota to 11. You know, when I talked about schools back in July and August, and I talked about this, and then talked about the Republicans saying, no face masks, no need for vaccines, get those teachers back to school. I said, you're going to kill these people. And now I'm realizing they said, fine with me. And that is where we're at. The so-called Christian right. The so-called Christian right serving up individuals to death with because God forbid there's a minor inconvenience for the public good. God forbid, you selfish, greedy jackasses. 11 teachers have died during this pandemic because of COVID. And dear Lord, if we just had face masks and vaccine mandates as best as we could, guess what? We'd have a lot less problem. There's also been, and this is, now, if you've listened the last few weeks, I have all sounding like a, you know, a snowstorm school report, read off the schools that have had the number of cases with 5 or more COVID cases. I have. Last week, it took me about 10 minutes to do it because there were 233 schools last week. The week before that was relatively easy. It was 96 schools. I can't do it this week. You know why? Yeah, you pretty much figured that one out, didn't you? There's 405 school districts. 405 schools, actually not school districts, schools, 405 that have had more than 5 COVID-19 cases, 5 or more in their school. 405. That means the number of school outbreaks has more than quadrupled in a matter of weeks. Yeah. 2 weeks ago, it was 96. 2 weeks ago, it was 96. It's now 405. It's been noticeable that COVID-19 cases rates statewide have been higher in counties in greater Minnesota, where vaccination rates are lower and COVID mitigation measures such as mask wearing are likely less well observed in comparison to the 7-county Twin Cities metro. And that is exactly the case in schools, too. The majority of the schools, 261 out of the 405 experiencing 5 or more COVID cases, come from greater Minnesota. Time for Matt's Math Corner. All right, what would that number be? 261 divided by 405. That means 65% of all the schools that have 5 or more cases are from outstate Minnesota, where only 44.5% of the population lives. Once again, I want to repeat that. 65% of the schools that have 5 or more cases are coming from outstate Minnesota, where outside of the 7-county metro area, where 55.5% of the population lives of the state of Minnesota, 44.5% lives in outstate Minnesota. They are way overachieving on that number. Dear Lord. School districts in the Twin Cities are more likely to have face mask requirements for students and staff. That said, there are examples of school districts responding to rising COVID cases by implementing mask requirements. This week, Fergus Falls Public Schools announced it would be requiring face masks among pre-K to 6th grade students coming on Monday. Good for you, Fergus Falls. Welcome to the party, pal. Should have had that policy in place beforehand. Yes, should have. I mean, it's not rocket science, and I'll get to that as well coming up here in a little bit. But Jeff is in Cambridge and wanted to chime in. Hey, Jeff, let's get you in before the break.
Sure. You were talking about the Christians and their influence in not wearing masks and stuff. And I'm in a Bible study up here in Cambridge, and just this morning we had one of our members decide not to wear a mask. Now, what we're doing is we're saying, according to what our church policy is that if you're not vaccinated, you must wear a mask.
Mm-hmm.
And so he goes about to quote Bible verse and everything, that, oh, it's up to God and everything. And it's like, Yes, but God gave you the vaccine. What's the deal here?
Okay, can I stop? Let's do a little Bible study here, Jeff, for a quick second, okay? The Gospel of Matthew, taking care of the sick. I guarantee you, as much as they try to find something from Timothy or Numbers or Exodus to try to validate their feelings, it was pretty clear. If you're a Christian, you follow what Jesus said. Jesus was pretty clear on this. You try to heal the sick, which would mean you're pro-vaccine and pro-face mask. And yet, so I would love to hear how the Gospel of Matthew doesn't matter to him.
Yeah. Well, and then I brought up the idea of, you know, the great commandment, treat your neighbor as you would yourself, or as I've treated you. You know, and it just doesn't connect with these people.
It doesn't.
One other quick thing I wanted to say, too, about the schools. I have done some substitute teaching in the past, and I'd love to get back to it, but up here in Cambridge, Isani County, I'm sure is not far off that list of poor vaccination rates. You know, I don't want to risk my health, even though I've been vaccinated.
I'll tell you what, and Jeff, thank you very much. What I will do is let me see if I can pull that up. The Itasca County numbers, I can give you that number. Because, yeah, that's an interesting. As a matter of fact, I might actually be able to pull it up here really quick here. Itasca County is, they are not good. they're not the worst. No, I mean, we went through the worst, but yeah, they're not the black, their counties are not in black, but it's the dark blue right before black. So yeah, they're not doing great up in Itasca County.
Is this Itasca County or Isandy County? Isandy's where he's from.
I said Itasca, Isandy. Isandy County. Same thing. There we go. Itasca and Isandy. Depends on your eyes. Are those the only two Iowa counties? Yes, they are. Isandy, Itasca, guess what? Both not doing well. Not a surprise. Take care, my friend. You definitely take care. And tell your Bible study friend to reread the Gospel of Matthew, because and as a matter of fact, if I can be blunt, as far as healing people, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, James, Psalms, they all talk about healing. All right, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, James, Psalms, all of them talk about giving health care to the needy, taking care of the sick, and I guarantee you this: vaccines are something Jesus would be behind, abso-freaking-lutely. Without a doubt. Without a doubt. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Once again, religious disclaimer, you do or don't do whatever it is you do or don't want to do, okay? Go. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. You are somebody that I don't know, but you're taking... AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Thank you very much to Todd Colet, who is sponsoring AM 950 all this week. You can sponsor us too. Now, Todd's situation is this. He lives in Spain, can't visit our clients, but he wanted to help out the station because he listens to us all the time. Gracias. I've learned that just for Todd. So if you'd like more information on how you can help out that same way, call us at 952-946-8885, 952-946-8885. Todd's band, Just Folks, has got the latest album out. It's Is It Monday is their latest single, and you can go. I'll have the link up for you a little bit later on both the Twitter and the Facebook page. Go click on it and give it a watch. It's a good video over on YouTube. Thank you very much to Todd. And once again, 952-946-8885 if you'd like more information on that. If you want to call in on the show, 952-946-6205. So, there is an excellent story here from Twin Cities, Axios Twin Cities. And I was going to try to have Tori, our friend on the show here, Tori Van Oot, come on the show and talk about it. Unfortunately, she was feeling a little under the weather, so all my best. I hope you heal up there. But it's a great article. And what sometimes you need is you need people to put things in perspective. And I'm just going to read through this article, and I'm going to go back and talk about it, because I'm going to post this article a little bit later on. There's a graphic you really need to see that's in this article. The majority of state employees subject to the Walz administration's COVID-19 vaccine or test mandate have gotten a shot. As of September 20, and by the way, that should be the vast majority. As of September 28th, 18,614 of the 25,357 qualifying state agency workers had submitted proof of vaccination per Minnesota Department of Management and Budget data. The vaccination rate then is about 73%. Well over half. And tracks with statewide trends. And once again, we should mention that another 25% of these employees have basically consented to testing, which they said that I don't want to get the vaccine, but I'll get tested to be safe. You know, I would hope you get the vaccine. I would. I mean, I understand there are some health conditions, could be a family member at home that's a little too dangerous. I get that. I also understand there are some legitimate religious exemptions here. I do understand that as well. But, you know, I think most of those people, you know, they are buying on that Republican talking point, but they also do understand there is a responsibility to the community to basically try to make sure people don't get sick. Now, you may not be the math whiz, so let me just recap that. 73% are vaccinated. 25% are not vaccinated but have consented to get tested on a regular basis. 73 plus 25 equals, well, that's 98%. 98% of the state employees subject to the Walz administration's vaccine or test mandate have either gotten their shots or have agreed to testing. 98%. And they haven't bellyached, and they have, well, maybe they have, but you know what? They still have agreed to do it. So I'll take, you know, at least you're complying out of the betterment for our community. At least you're complying. 98% have agreed to it. 98%. I want to keep repeating this because this is going to come back. 98%. All right. Just 523 employees out of 25,357 have not submitted proof of vaccination or consented to testing. The Minnesota Department of Management and Budget data had wrote recently in a letter to lawmakers, the figure could include seasonal employees who might no longer need to follow the rule. So it is unclear how many employees who declined to comply are facing unpaid leave and other disciplinary actions. That, according to Fox 9 notes, this is once again an Axios Twin Cities story. Because the rule only applies to those who need to work in the office, the number of eligible workers can vary from week to week. The bottom line, the numbers could preview adoption rates as vaccine mandates spread throughout the public and private sector. So basically, once again, I want to make sure we say this, because if you listen to certain people, Republicans, if you listen to certain people, the narrative is that the vast majority of us are victims. We're victims. This tyrannical reign of Governor Walz needs to end. Yeah, that's your standard Republican? Yeah. Whiners. Anyway, what the reality is only 2%. 2% of all state employees are these people, which means 98% of people are okay with this, and they're moving ahead. They're either getting shots or they're agreeing to testing. 523. That's it. That's all the employees that we're talking about here. 523. And I don't want to, you know, a job's a job. I'm going to guess that if you the most of the people here probably, most of them, not all of them, probably not happiest in their job, because if you were happy in your job and you really liked your job, I guarantee you wouldn't be risking your job in this capacity. But that's apparently what they seem to be trying to do. Ladies and gentlemen, I will say this. Sounds like there might be some open positions within the state government. And if you've got yourself, you know, some vaccinations, well, maybe you need to put in an application. Just keep an eye out on that one. I bring this out once again because it is time for us to call out the absolute crap that is the Republican Party and, you know, their entire mentality towards coronavirus. There's a story in the reformer, Senate Republicans and DFL Governor Walz are setting out on Wednesday outlined drastically contrasting approaches to managing the ongoing pandemic, setting up a protracted legislative impasse as the NIR calls on lawmakers to act on a raft of COVID-19 mitigation measures. Walz is calling for mandatory vaccination of long-term care workers, teachers, and other school staff, among other recommendations he outlined on Tuesday afternoon. But he's limited in his authority to act alone. In July, he reached a compromise with lawmakers to end his peacetime emergency declaration, giving up his emergency powers. Senate Republicans, who have long opposed pandemic restrictions and mandates, used a Human Services Committee on Wednesday to criticize Walz's administration handing of the rollout of vaccines for state workers. They also appeared cool to Walz's pandemic request, which would include waivers to address workforce shortages in hospitals and nursing homes. Walz recently ordered... Okay, so and I want to mention again, the Republicans, they're not concerning themselves with the 98% of the state workers who have either gotten vaccinated or have agreed to get tests. I guess they're traitors. Instead, they opened up this meeting to bring in the victims, the 2%ers, tyrannical raid. Oh, you guys are so damn predictable. Anyway, Walz recently ordered the state that the state's more than 36,000 public workers either show proof of vaccination or provide regular proof of testing. More than 10,000 workers are working remotely, leaving about 25,000 workers subject to the new policy, as we discussed in the Axios story. Kristen Batson, deputy commissioner of the Minnesota Management and Budget, said 523 state workers, roughly 2% of those affected, have not submitted proof of vaccination or consented to testing. So this is, okay, and I'm going to just, once again, I want to make sure we understand something here. These are people who, for whatever their reason, like I said, it's one thing if you say, okay, I'm not going to get vaccinated, but okay, well, you keep your job, no problem, you're just going to get tested. Okay. most people, I think, would step back and say, well, okay, if this is the way I can prevent, make sure I'm not going to get vaccinated, if this is the way I'm going to go on out there and ensure that I am not going to get my coworker, well, so be it. It's a minor inconvenience. I'll go do that. Nope. So basically, these people seem to be somewhat selfish. And I brought up the point, one of them was talking about, you know, I love how Republicans always play this out. It's like, you guys with your vaccines, you're trying to force your will on us by trying to scare us. Meanwhile, you get these people in these meetings and they're like, if you don't allow me to work there without the vaccine, we're all going to quit. And then there's not going to be anyone working there and people will die. Oh, okay. Who's trying to scare who now? You could have a test and then basically just, oh, you're sick. Well, you need to go home. Done. Instead, you want to be belligerent idiots. But it takes some belligerent idiots to know belligerent idiots. The Republican Party comes to their aid. State Senator Jim Abler, a Republican from Anoka, chair of the Senate Human Services Reform Policy and Finance and Policy Committee, longtime vaccine skeptic idiot, invited some of his state employees to object to the mandate to testify at the Senate hearing on Wednesday. So once again, they went out and tried to find of the 2% people that were willing to come in and testify because they're the real victims, even though 98% of the state's workers have agreed to this. Wow. Okay. That the argument is, no, these people need to be able to go in there unregulated to sicken everyone in that office. And if you dare try to stop them, then you're the tyrant. Wow. That is the Republican Party, isn't it? Abler said he'd spoken with 40 state government workers. Well, that's basically about 10% of all the people that are going to be. Dude, man, that's pretty quick. You got most of them right there. Spoke to 40 state government workers who oppose the new workforce rules. Liz Schwansky, a state employee who helps provide community-based services, said she's opposed to testing and vaccination rules on the grounds of health privacy concerns. Testing should be done across the board regardless of vaccination status, she said. See, as the concept is if you get most of the people vaccinated, then the only way that's going to happen is if some idiot, I mean, complete and total moron, Liz, walks into the office sick as a dog and they don't know they're sick. I know. Abler said the committee would not be debating the underlying merits of the vaccination. Good, because listen here, Dingbat, you basically the vaccines work. You know, did you hear the numbers earlier that the two counties in the state actually have some of the lowest rates of infection? Hey, you didn't hear that, did you? No, that goes against your narrative. So you kind of zoned it out, you know, buzzing and chirping, that sort of thing. He believed in workers' individual rights should be protected. So once again, I want to make sure we understand this. This is the Republican stance, is that the 98% of us who are of the government workers, not me, the 98% of the government workers who are either vaccinated or agreed to testing, that their health and safety doesn't matter. Does not matter. That they have decided that the 2% are the only people they need to concern themselves. The 2%. Liz and others warned that this rule could drive away state workers. Well, not many of them. Some. I mean, and trust me, I think we are. If they're hiring, you know, those are good jobs, people. As well as workers in long-term care facilities who do not want to be vaccinated. Now, let's face it. If I had someone in a long-term care facility that was a family member and I found out there were some freaking nutbags in there that weren't vaccinated, I'd get my loved one out of there because you guys are freaking nuts. Clown car. So I want to make sure we understand this. The Republicans, 98% of people have either been vaccinated or agreed to testing. Only 2% are being selfish jackasses. Maybe not all of them, but most of them. There might be, I don't know. I mean, what would be the reason that you wouldn't want to get tested? Well, I don't know. It just, you've decided that 2%, as opposed to the rest of us, that the 98% don't matter. That the right of the 2% to get everyone sick in their office overrides everything else. You know, you say, Abler, you say you're for workers' rights. How about the workers' rights not have to be working with an idiot that's going to sicken the entire floor? How about that workers' right? No, I'm just tired of you guys taking your stupid. I'll tell you what. Let me take a break. When I do come on back, from the break, what I'm going to do here is let me give you an idea of exactly what these people are suggesting. All right, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. So, once again, I want to make sure we understand this. The Republican Party seems to be willing to jeopardize the health and safety of 98% of the state workers to protect some mythical rights that they're pulling out of their caboose for the 2% of people who are just too selfish to either get vaccinated or get tested. I see. I brought this analogy up this morning up on Twitter and Facebook, and I'll stand by it because the more I think about it, the more this is absolutely spot on. The same science that tells us the COVID-19 vaccines work is the same science that we have out there that says meth is bad. It is. It's the same exact science. And whereas I'll go out on a limb here, I think pretty much all, maybe not all, but I think most Republicans would all agree meth is bad, which means they are willing to acknowledge the science that tells us methamphetamines are bad. Meanwhile, the same people that would say meth is bad will go over there and say, well, the same science being used here doesn't matter. It doesn't matter at all. So what the Republicans are basically one step away from is defending someone who says, I've done my own research, and I've determined that meth is perfectly okay. So unless you allow me to be a daycare provider, taking as much meth as I possibly can while I watch the kiddos, then you're discriminating against me. You're basically one step away from that. If you're at the point where you're throwing away the science with the vaccines, well, you're pretty close to that. Because what would be with the meth guy? He'd be jeopardizing the kids, his coworkers, everyone. Well, isn't that exactly what this 2% who you imply are the poor, the downtrodden? Why can't we think about them? Well, because we've got 98% of us who just don't want to get sick, you idiots. But the reality is this, and folks, I don't say this lightly. I do not. It is clear to me the Republican plan seems to be to try to make the coronavirus epidemic last as long as it can for the value of political victory. That they want people to get sick. They want people to die. They want people to lose their entire family fortunes having to pay for hospital bills. And it's crap like this that just backs up that theory. And the whole point is they don't care about their own constituents. They want them sick. They want them dead. Because at the end of the day, they're just hoping to say, see, COVID's bad still. Governor Walz doesn't need some more time in office. This is a horrendously dangerous path they're taking us on. But this is the modern Republican Party today. They can't win on basic merit, so they basically have to try to scare people. And I think that they're using the coronavirus epidemic as a way to basically terrorize their own voters to ensure that they get votes. That is some evil crap. Hour two up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. 5 o'clock hour on your Thursday. Good to have you with us today. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Patrick, you did hear me talk last hour how the Republicans seem to be basically saying that the 98% of us, the state workers that have been vaccinated or agreed to testing, their health and safety don't matter, that the only thing that matters is the 2% who basically seem to be wanting to jeopardize the health and safety of everyone else. You heard that right?
Absolutely.
Let me put this in better perspective for you this. Guess what the percentage of people that smoke in the United States is today? What's the percentage?
Is it 6%?
No, it's 14. Well, welcome to North Carolina. It's 14% of this country. 14% of this country still smokes, right? All right? 14%. I highly doubt the Republican Party in the state of Minnesota, and once again, that's 7 times the percentage of the amount of percentage they're defending that we're talking about the horrible, horrible tyranny. That 2% is 7 times smaller than 14%. Actually, I don't think it's the 14% is, 7 times larger. I'll say it like that. But what you've got there is, can you imagine any Republican in this state saying, you know what, get rid of the smoking sections. People should be able to smoke in their office. There shouldn't be smoking. People should be able to smoke everywhere. And if you think about this for a quick second, those are two very comparable things. Because where if you get a sick person who refuses to get vaccinated or get tested to find out if they're sick, goes into an office environment and gets a bunch of people sick, how is exactly that different than a jackass coming in and smoking in front of everyone in the office and potentially giving people lung cancer? It isn't. But yet, even though far more people still smoke in the United States than are, as far as state employees trying to opt out of either a vaccine or a test, the Republican Party would never back up that. Never. Because they know that most people would be outraged. But here they are because, and this is why I'm very glad with the Axios Twin Cities and the Reformer, you have to put this in perspective. They are fighting for only 2% of people on a made-up hill that they are pretending they're willing to die on while they jeopardize the 98% of us that want to actually be healthy. Think about that for a second. Those are two very comparable things. But look at the Republicans and look at how they act today and what their priority is. Their priority isn't the vaccinated. The priority isn't the people who don't want to get vaccinated but understand they have a larger responsibility. Their only thing is the people who feel as if Governor Walz is a tyrant. Go quit. Go. Just go. Go, you whiners. Go. Because I'll take this shocking stance, folks. Are you ready? The health and well-being of the 98% should matter in the discussion. Ta-da! It should. And no, we shouldn't revisit smoking rules. 952-946-6205. Patrick, I got a news story here. Breaking news. Tragedy. Tragedy from the Northland. Two people were injured Wednesday night when their SUV hit a bear in northern Minnesota. Now, the best part about this article, and I'll post this a little bit later on, is they put a picture of a bear like it's the bear. It's like, here's your culprit right here. There's the bear that got it. That's the one we were looking for. The Minnesota State Patrol's crash report says 72-year-old woman was driving a Nissan Rogue south of Highway 59 near County Road 25 when it struck a black bear that was in the traffic lane. Was it signal on? The woman suffered life-threatening injuries in there. I can't imagine the amount of damage that did. She was taken to a local hospital. Her passenger, a 69-year-old man who also suffered non-life-threatening injuries, was also taken to the hospital. The condition of the bear has not been released. Well, the crash happened about 10:12 p.m. in Pembina Township, Hahnemann County. Well, considering that's one of the worst counties for coronavirus, I don't know why the bear's out running around without a mask anyway. So, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. I always told the story. Have I told you the story about the moose when I was up in Bemidji?
I don't think so.
Got a call from Beltrami County Sheriff, said, come on out. I was working up in Bemidji. He comes, you got to go see this. Apparently some guy, it was a little hatchback, had hit a moose. The moose, not appreciating getting hit, apparently thrust its antler into the hood of the car and he lost the antler. It was lodged in the engine block and it walked away. And animals are tough, man.
You know, people like to think of deer and moose as kind of these similar things if you live in the cities.
Oh,
and
no.
Moose are something that you don't want anything to do with.
I was on a mountain bike trail up in Bemidji, and I flushed a moose on the mountain bike trail. And it sounded like a freaking dinosaur in Jurassic Park coming through the woods. I mean, it was just huge. Now, I scared him as much as he scared me, and he went the opposite direction. He or she, I guess I should. They went in the opposite direction, and I went the other way. But still, that scared the living daylights. I mean, that thing was massive. It is huge. A bear, a black bear, is not nearly the size of brown bear, grizzlies, any of the big ones, polar. But they're stocky. I can't imagine. Well, first of all, I got to admit, if you hit him with an SUV, that probably took the bear out. But I wouldn't be surprised if the bear walked away. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the bear walked away. They're tough. Since I brought this up, I will say one thing. There's talk in Wisconsin about their wolf hunting season, that they basically have made the story is that they're going to get 130 wolves out. That's going to be the limit that they can get. And I said, that's just garbage. Of course, they're going to shoot a heck of a lot more wolves. But the main part, one of the things I don't like about that kind of hunting, the hunting that, because no one eats a wolf. No one really eats bear. I mean, unless you're in like the heart of Alaska. It's not exactly, I mean, you know, sure, it might be something, you know, unique and, you know, counter programming on a menu someplace. But the reality is people don't eat bear. They don't eat wolf. They pose them. They basically stuff them and pose them. And I have yet to go to someone's house that has a stuffed bear or a wolf that doesn't tell me the story of, I was struggling for my life. Oh, my God. I was just trying to make some coffee. And then the creature came out of the woods, and I fell to the back, and I grabbed my gun, and I'm lucky to be alive. No, you didn't. You shot the bear at a dumpster. It was looking for leftover mac and cheese from the local restaurant. You probably put a bait pile out on the wolf, for God's sakes. Don't give me that. People that stuff these in, they have their story ready to go. And I don't think we should allow hunting just to basically validate a made-up story to that some idiot basically wants to push out there. That is, this is here I was the hero. No. Shooting bears at bait piles or shooting a wolf while it goes to the bathroom is not heroic in any capacity. And don't get me wrong, if you are definitely in a case where you've got cattle, lambs, whatever, that are being attacked by the wolf, by all means, I can understand that. But it's these people that go out and hunt them, because I have yet to see anyone say, oh, yeah, that one there, yeah, it was going to the bathroom and I blasted it. And so there you go, mounted. No one has that story. 952-946-6205. I got to bring this up, this national story about Trump. Top Justice Department officials and White House attorneys threatened to resign en masse if then-President Donald Trump followed through with his plans to aggressively pursue unfounded claims of election fraud in his final days in office, according to the Senate Judiciary Committee report examining Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. The report entitled Subverting Justice, How the Former President and His Allies Pressured the Department of Justice to Overturn the 2020 Election was released on Thursday and includes the most detailed information yet about a meeting on January 3rd in which Trump fought with top officials in hopes of installing a loyalist as the acting attorney general. The plan was part of a final attempt to retain power after his loss to Joe Biden by more than 6 million votes and came amid his ongoing and false claims that widespread voter fraud had cost him the race. The New York Times first published the details of the document late on Wednesday. According to the report, White House counsel Pat Cipollone likened Trump's effort to a murder-suicide pact and threatened to resign alongside his deputy. Trump later relented. So when even the most loyalist of loyalties is being strained here. The document draws interviews and documents from several top Department of Justice officials, including the acting attorney general during Trump's last month in office, Jeffrey Rosen, Rosen's deputy, Richard Donahue, and the former U.S. attorney for Atlanta, Byung Pak. The document also includes more context about the role of Jeffrey Clark, the little-known Justice Department official who reportedly spoke with Trump several times about how to cast doubt on the election results. The Times previously reported that Trump pushed to install Clark as the acting attorney general, but the Senate report adds details to Clark's efforts to bolster false claims about the election, including an instance where he pushed his bosses to send a letter to officials in Georgia falsely claiming there were significant concerns with the state's election results. So basically, he adds loyalists who are willing to lie and make up stuff. The report also adds context to efforts by Representative Scott Perry, Republican of Pennsylvania. And this is one of the first times you've actually seen one of these guys now getting tied into this, someone from the Congress, who, as documents say, pressured Donahue to probe false claims of election fraud in the state. Biden won Pennsylvania by a narrow margin. It also details Trump's efforts to force PAC to resign and install another loyalist in Atlanta who had donated to his campaign. Georgia became a key focal point for the unfounded claims of voter fraud after Biden narrowly won the state as well. The interim report comes amid several inquiries into Trump's attempts to undercut the results of the election before the insurrection in the Capitol on January 6th. Senator Dick Durbin, chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, told the Times the report shows the American people just how close we came to a constitutional crisis. Thanks to the number of upstanding Americans in the Department of Justice, Trump was unable to bend the department to his will, Durbin said in a statement to the newspaper, which it doesn't sound like there was universal. It does sound like there were some people within the Department of Justice who are willing to basically turn this country into a laughingstock. It should also be noted today that at a U.S. congressional hearing, House hearing, on the Arizona recount, you had them call out Biggs. The Democrats called out Biggs, the Republican from Arizona, who, once again, I want to make sure we understand something. He knows. He knows that Biden won, but he refused to even acknowledge that happened. He insists there still is a question. Even after the Cyber Ninjas audit showed that Biden had more votes, he is still insisting, no, we don't know who won Arizona. And going back to what I said last hour about the thought that where we're at right now is the Republicans seem to be trying to keep this pandemic going as long as possible because they feel as if it will be good for them politically if they have to, you know, they can take this all the way to the election. On top of that, put this out there, this idea that you still have Republicans who refuse to acknowledge that Joe Biden was the legitimate winner of the election. And they're doing this not because they actually believe it, but because they're pushing a narrative for their voters. And on top of that, there was the other story today from the national level where the Republicans apparently do not have enough votes to overcome the filibuster to basically extend the debt ceiling. And so you've got this, what you end up getting is you got a bunch of people whose entire goal, because once again, Republicans can't win fair and square. They've got to gerrymander. They've got to rig the elections. They've got to basically throw as many people off the voter ranks. They've got to do everything in their power. They've got to outspend the Democrats 10-1, including a ton of dark money. They've got to do all these things to stay in power. And right now, they're realizing even with all that, there's a decent chance they're going to lose. So what they're decided to do is basically destroy the country if they can. They would rather destroy the country than lose. Or destroy the country than basically put forward a platform that isn't just our way or the highway. That is who they are. They will tank the U.S. economy. They will continue lying about the legitimacy of a legitimate election, and they'll keep trying to make their own constituents as sick as possible for as long as possible. Because this is the only way they think they can win. And Democrats, the days of you sitting on the sidelines and saying, well, we're not going to dignify. Shut up. Get out there, get in the mud, and start fighting. Because I'm be damned if I'm going to allow, such as with the coronavirus, 2% of state workers to be the narrative that 98% of state workers, their health, their safety doesn't matter to Republicans. And if you don't start calling this crap out, guess what? They're going to do it again. And they'll do it as long as they can. So you need to get out there. It's time to fight. For God's sakes, 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. It is funny watching how the Republicans are falling back to the locker room talk kind of mentality in regards to the Trump and the coup attempt, the attempt to overthrow democracy in the United States twice. Not only did he try it with the Justice Department, he tried it with his little horde of idiots that went and stormed the Capitol on the 6th. Twice he tried to. And people are pointing out that the Republicans are saying, well, of course he talked about it, but at the end he didn't do it. Like that somehow is validation. I mean, my God. I mean, it's clear that he wanted to overthrow the government, and it's only the fact that basically everyone in government was going to quit on him, or most of the people outside of the extreme loyalists were going to quit, that he basically backed off of it. I mean, it just, when you look at this level, I mean, there's a guy that posts up on Twitter, and he posted this thing about, oh, let me talk about Afghanistan and the failures of Joe Biden. Oh my God, the failures of Joe Biden. And I'm like, okay, dude, okay, I'm a veteran, all right? If you're going to get into this, let's get into this. You guys had how many Benghazi investigations? How many? 8? You were planning on a 9th and a 10th if Hillary Clinton won in 2016? You kept screaming, all U.S. lives matter. We need full investigation. Then, under Trump, We had four soldiers who were left behind in Niger. Four who were left behind in Niger and were killed. Four of them left behind, brutally killed in Niger. Not a peep. Not a peep from any Republican. Clearly there was a mistake made. Clearly there was a problem here. At no point did any Republican, while Trump was in office, demand one investigation into what freaking happened in Niger. And today we still do not know exactly how those soldiers got left behind, who is in the command structure, and who actually ordered the military action. We also have the Kurds. Don't you remember the Kurds? Remember our allies? We went to war with Iraq because they're our good buddies. Remember that? I remember that. Donald Trump turned his back on him, allowed the Turks and the Russians to slaughter them. Just turned our back on him, allowed them to get slaughtered. And there are reports that that's indeed what did happen. Did any Republican demand an investigation into Trump's actions there? And what happened to our good friends, the Kurds? Nope. Nothing. But now all of a sudden, Afghanistan! Oh, please. I'm a veteran. When your outrage meter is so bipolar, I don't have any time for you. I don't have any time for you. And I want to make sure we understand. I mean, we already know who the Republican Party is. I mean, Republican parties refused to even entertain Barack Obama's Supreme Court nominee in 2016 because they said you can't have that in an election year. And then all of a sudden, Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies in the final year of Trump's term. He's like, get in there quick. Get him in there. Go. Gotta do it now. They have two sets of rules. One if there's a D next to their name, one if there's an R next to their name. And the R could slaughter our own troops live on camera, and Republicans would come on out there and say, well, it looks like stress relief to me. They knew what they signed up for. Meanwhile, one person dies overseas under Biden, and we need 75 full investigations. Your outrage is so bipolar. And here not only do you have a Senate report. You're all in the Senate. The senators are all in the Senate. You have a Senate report that says, oh, Trump tried to pull off a coup before then he tried to pull off his other coup. Remember when you guys all fled for your freaking lives on January 6th? Because he sent an angry mob in there to try to kill Mike Pence and try to disrupt the electoral voting process? It's pretty dang clear there was two coup attempts because Trump, that petulant little man-child, couldn't just sit there and accept the fact that he lost fair and square. And so here we are today, where Chuck Grassley, one of the more senior members of the Senate, dear God, the man's a fossil, out there saying, well, sure, locker room talk. He talked about trying to overthrow the government, but in the end, well, he didn't do it with the first time, and the second time it kind of failed on its own. But, you know, no blood, no foul, huh? Come on, Matt. No blood, no foul. It is just, this country is broken because of the Republican Party. And their goal right now is to not make anyone's life better. It's not. It's to make all of our lives as bad as possible so that they have a chance in the election. They're terrified of health care for all. They're terrified for pre-K education. They're terrified of mass transportation where people can use it and enjoy it. They're terrified of a clean environment because if people start realizing, they're terrified of good paying jobs. Because it starts getting better for you, then they'll realize, well, maybe the Republicans have been lying to us. So they're just trying to make you sick. They're trying to make you poor. And at the end of the day, they're basically trying to get you to believe every conspiracy theory they can pull out of their backside. Because at the end of the day, that's all they have. So It's time for us to freaking grow up. The United States, maybe we are coming out of our teenage years. And it's now it's time for us to get the job and actually start getting up in the morning and getting dressed and going to work. It's time for us to start acting like this country matters and our lives matter. And it's time for us to stop voting frickin' Republican because, my God, like I said in last hour, when you have them screaming at the top of their lungs about the rights of the 2% of people who want the right to sicken as many of their coworkers as possible, as opposed to the 98% who basically are either vaccinated or are willing to get tested on a regular basis, that just tells you they're broken to the freaking core. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. When we do return, Sven Sundgaard will talk some weather. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard is the weatherman extraordinaire for bringmethenews.com. Also, the forecastissold.com. Forecastissold.com/weather. You can find his weather reports as well as also all sorts of great information there. YouTube, you should be following his channel there as well. And he's kind enough to join us to talk about weather on a Thursday. Hey, Sven.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing very well. And by the way, I do love going to the forecast, going to forecastissold.com/weather. That's a great set. I'm glad you're doing all that other weather information in there as well.
Yeah, you know, it allows me to kind of fill in some gaps, you know, without any time constraints, and to kind of separate out some things like, you know, the drought update every week and some other stuff. And stay tuned, that we'll expand to a lot more stuff here as they build it out more.
I have been, if you know me at all, I'm out hiking in parks all the time. I'm out in the woods.
That's all
I'm,
I see. It's you out in the woods. In my newsfeed.
Lurking in the woods. Also, I got some new ones. I was down in Tierney Woods today. It really is amazing. The drought, I'm no botany expert or tree expert. But I can tell you right now, as opposed to last year the leaves were spectacular. This year, the leaves, it's been really sporadic. I mean, we had some early leaves go. We've had some pretty colors, but a lot of those trees are already empty. And there's a lot of trees right now that just seem to be going from like yellow, dull yellow to brown. I don't know if we're going to have a great year. And I should also mention, a lot of trees I noticed are still green.
Oh, absolutely. Especially from the Twin Cities metro area. You know, I haven't been up north, but pictures and reports I've seen were that they're actually kind of were surprised that colors actually have been pretty decent up there, or were, I guess it's, you know, getting past peak a little bit, of course, in the northeastern part of the state. But here it does. I agree with your assessment. It seems, again, not a botanist, but it seems more muted, and the trees that I see on a regular basis around me in Minneapolis have kind of green to brief yellow to brown to just kind of falling off. Like I bike through Loring Park regularly, and it seems like all of a sudden one day there's just a lot of leaves on the ground, and I don't remember them ever turning color.
And I went out to Loose Line Orchard this last weekend. I was out, and there were a few groves of trees out there that were pretty spectacular. It just, it doesn't, I mean, and I know that a lot of those areas had bad drought. There just does seem to be in the city itself, there seems to be less of a color ratio than you would see in a normal year.
Yeah, you know, and I think what it might, and hopefully a botanist chimes in and asks one of us with the answer, but I bet it has to do with the species of trees, because what I've noticed is in the southern part of the state here, the trees that are still pretty spectacular looking are maples. They seem to be like always spectacular. And of course, there's a lot more of those in northeastern Minnesota than we have here in the Twin Cities area, because I have noticed those are still your beautiful reds, but we just don't have as many of those here. We have a lot more ash trees, box elders, and they just kind of seem stressed. Yeah. They're just sort of blah, yellow, browns. But I also think, you know, I talked about this a little bit on my website and in my weather videos this week, that, you know, the extraordinary lack of cold nights we've had is probably influencing that, especially in the urban heat island. But, you know, obviously there's been more nights below 50 degrees outside of the metro. But even there, if we're much warmer than normal at night, so is everywhere else. Yeah. It's just obviously there's a discrepancy of the urban heat island. And so I wonder if, you know, especially in the metro area, the lack of chilly nights is kind of muting those colors too, because that really speeds things up. If you ever really pay attention to it, and you probably do since you're always out hiking and stuff, it's once you get those consistently chilly nights, especially there's something about getting below 50 degrees or, you know, especially even in the 30s, that just really jolts the trees. And they've kind of been allowed to just slowly go into dormancy, I think, this fall, because the only thing they're really honing in on is the decreasing sunlight, which is the same every year.
Yeah.
But it just hasn't been very cold.
I'm going to get more to the heat here in a second, because there's some, you know, some numbers you put out that are interesting. But you had something in your weather forecast I can't remember if I've ever seen, a low pressure system moving westbound. It started in Michigan and it moved over to Arkansas. And I'm okay. I don't understand the science of it all, but was it just that big of a low pressure system that was able to go back against the grain?
You know, this actually does happen more often than you'd think.
Okay.
And now that you notice this one, you'll probably notice it more. And I point them out when they do happen generally, because they're not that frequent. But we call it retrograding. It just means moving backwards. They're not very common, because obviously most things are moving west to east in our part of the northern hemisphere. But what happens is these systems get what we call vertically stacked, which means essentially a low pressure area at the surface. If you go up through the atmosphere, that lower pressure is further east of the area below it. That's what kind of continues the progression of the development of that system. And so what happens is essentially, if you look at the low pressure aloft and the low pressure at the surface, they're almost exactly in the same spot. So there's not really anything to cause the storm system to develop outward or eastward. So that's one factor. But also, if it's too far removed from the jet stream, you know, we've seen, you know, this is something we've talked about before, is our jet streams are getting a little wonkier, more tangled and wobbly and all over the place, rather than more wavy and flowing like they should. And so one of these upper level lows can kind of get detached, and then it just sits and kind of floats around because there's nothing to push it anywhere. And they do cause some issues, you know, as far as forecasting headaches. Like this week, if you really pay attention to the weather, as much as I know you do, and certainly any meteorologist, it's screwed up our forecasts all week. You've seen precipitation one day, temperatures are different. Wait, where'd all the clouds come from all of a sudden? It was supposed to be sunny all week. And it's all because of this upper level low that is moving backwards. And the computer models have a hard time with these, because it just defies gravity in a sense. So they can catch on to it. And they'll even, the models did catch on to it eventually and forecasted the general movement, but still it tries to move them along quicker than they should, because it's just, again, it defies sort of, you know, logic and mathematics.
You're not supposed to be doing that. I mean, it looks like Jupiter. We're going that way now. All right. You had mentioned the heat. This morning I walked my dog at 5:45. It was, 64 degrees in Hopkins. For October 7th, that's nuts.
Yeah. No, it's been remarkable. And this is just one of a string of nights here that won't get below 60 in the Twin Cities. And keep in mind, the normal high right now is 62. That's the normal high temperature. Mm-hmm. So to have an overnight low in the 60s in October is really, really warm. And it's been a running theme. You and I have talked about this, and I've talked about it at length all summer. The heat, those records are impressive. Those temperatures are impressive. But what's really even more crazy are just the warm nights. And that's a consistent thing. And it's consistent with climate change, because remember, the greenhouse effect isn't magnifying the sun or doing anything like that. The way the carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases work is it traps in the heat that otherwise would escape. So it makes sense that at night you're going to see the strongest warming signal at night, and then in places that experience cold winter. So that's why places like Minnesota and the Arctic, what's our most pronounced signal? It's those overnight temperatures, and it's those wintertime temperatures that are the dramatically changing.
You have talked also on your latest weather forecast, you talked about the fact that now, because of this heat bubble that's building over us, we are looking at the second or third warmest first part of October on record, correct?
Yeah, and it's almost guaranteed. And that's the other thing that's been crazy this year, is we've been able to, it's been a breeze basically every month. By the middle of the month, I'm able to plug in the forecast numbers based on what we already have, and it's virtually a lock that that month will be whatever it ends up being ranked. And normally we have to wait till the end of these things and say, oh yeah, we ended up 12th warmest or 20th coldest. But yeah, again, at least for this first half of October, you know, a week from tomorrow is the 15th, the Ides of October. And it's, yeah, a virtual lock that this will end up third. It will end up the third warmest. I mean, there's not even close between third and fourth place, but we're going to be very close with the second warmest start to October, first half of October. And another thing, I don't know if you're going to bring this up or not, but again, going back to those overnight lows, this is going to go down as the first October on record where we didn't have one night below 50 degrees in the first 10 days of the month, or maybe even the first 14 or 15 days of the month. That's never happened before. Even 1879 was an insanely hot October. Mm-hmm. Also 2011, just 10 years ago, I think we talked about this last week, a string of 80s, almost 90 degrees. Even those years had at least one or a few nights in the 40s. This year, none.
You as well, and we've talked about the long-term forecast, and you know, you've been very clear. You can't really bank too much on them because there's so many different variables, you know, like low pressure systems moving westward, that sort of thing. But yeah. What you've got now is it seems as if a lot of these earlier models are kind of shedding this idea that it's going to get cold, it's going to be snowy, whatever they were going to say. Now they all seem to say, oh yeah, this warmth, it looks like it's going to hold on now well into the next year. This bubble now, they really are saying that it's going to be a much warmer than expected winter too.
Yeah, I just don't see how we have a colder than normal winter. So I think we talked about last week, like AccuWeather or the old Farmer's Almanac, you know, coming out with these bold predictions of periods of snow and cold in January. you know, it's only one in four winters in recent decades are cooler than normal when you compare it to the historical average. So you don't have to be a meteorologist. You can just place your bets based on just statistics. Three out of four times you're going to be right by forecasting a warmer than normal winter. It's just very rare. Last time we did that was that 2013-14 winter that everybody remembers. It was the first time most people had heard of the polar vortex, even though it's not a new thing.
Yeah. Well, and you had brought up, and you've been saying this forever, it's like the months that are getting warmer are, you know, are December, January. These months are getting warmer. What is it? Is it April is the only one that's really been getting colder?
February and April.
February and April.
Yep. And to get to that point, so while I'm saying, you know, it's guaranteed almost a warmer than, you know, just like last winter. Yeah, we had those cold 10 days of February, and I absolutely don't rule that out. That we could have another 10 days of nasty cold at some point this winter. Because one of the interesting things, and this is sort of an exciting area of research in meteorology, is understanding more the polar vortex. Because what we're specifically referring to is the stratospheric polar vortex. So it's the layer of the atmosphere above the troposphere, which is the atmosphere where we live in and where all our weather occurs. Mm-hmm. And we have some of the least understanding of it because it's, you know, 40,000 feet plus up. It's hard to get a lot of observations, but satellites have helped a lot. And one of the things, there's more and more research coming out that it seems counterintuitive, but climate change is screwing up patterns such that it's disturbing the polar vortex. So it's again, it seems kind of counterintuitive. If you disrupt the polar vortex, you think, oh, doesn't that mean less winter or nicer? No, in an ideal situation, the polar vortex spins nicely, tightly near the poles and kind of wobbles around the Arctic. But when we get these big waves of heat, these crazy patterns that we've been seeing, you know, less sea ice, so there's more heat being put off by the ocean, these large wave patterns develop, and it literally sort of knocks it off. And it's like you got a spinning yo-yo. You smack it, eventually it's going to wobble and stop spinning and moves way off from where it should. And that's like what we saw last year, you know, in that deadly deep freeze. So again, it seems counterintuitive, but we're getting air that shouldn't be in the mid latitudes more frequently. And there's satellite data and some new research out along with modeling that's shown that the vortex, polar vortex, is being disturbed more, it seems, as the atmosphere is warming. So don't count out extreme bouts of winter. But when you look at it, last winter is a great example. Big picture, the net effect, warmer than normal, but you still can have these extreme bouts. And you know, if you get air that belongs in the Arctic in Texas, obviously that's a problem. We notice it less. You know, it didn't shut down anything here in February, but that air should not be in Houston.
Speaking of extremes, Italy, 29 inches of rain in 12 hours. A new record. Yeah. That is, yep. 2.5 inches of rain an hour. My God, that is. I'm usually, if you get 1 hour of that, that's going to cripple a town. But 12 hours. The pictures from Italy were pretty stark.
Yeah. No. And this is again the running theme of climate change is. It's easy in Minnesota, I think, to want to simplify and say, oh, warmer world. That's nice for Minnesota, right? Well, no, because extremes are getting more extreme. And if you live in an extreme climate like we do, our extremes are becoming more extreme. Overall, you know, we've talked about this. Minnesota is getting wetter, and specifically these extreme precipitation events, not on the scale of Italy yet, but there's no reason to not see something almost as crazy here. We've been seeing these 500-year floods happening multiple times in the winter. This year just happens to be the other extreme where it's extreme drought. And, you know, again, we go back to, you know, species that have evolved. Humans can adapt a little bit better, but the species of plants and animals that have evolved to Minnesota's climate, how much longer can they handle these crazy extremes becoming more extreme? Drought, flood, 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 drought, flood, flood, flood. You know, it's just, it's not sustainable.
Yeah. And in my lifetime, you've seen the moose pretty much leave. You've seen the snowy owls pretty much leave. You've seen most of the red foxes as well. They're pretty much gone now, too.
Yeah, moose, you know, I think I've talked about this before with you, and I do this anytime I give a climate talk. You know, the polar bear is to the moose is to Minnesota as the polar bear is to the globe. Will moose go extinct from the planet? No, not anytime soon, because they'll still live well in northern Canada, Alaska, Norway, places like that. But in Minnesota, moose may very well, if not even likely, go extinct from our state. You know, and that's an icon of the North Woods. And that's one of the more subtle examples of climate change is a species that maybe doesn't risk going extinct from the planet, but goes extinct from a habitat or a geography. And I don't know about you, but a Minnesota without moose or bear, yeah, we can't really claim to be the North Woods anymore.
No, it is changing it. And with the species that go, all of a sudden the what they eat gets changed. And yeah, it becomes a tumbling circumstance. It comes downhill. It's only going to get worse.
If you don't believe the IPCC or a thermometer, ask a polar bear or a moose if the climate's changing.
Well, don't get too close to the moose. We were talking about moose earlier. They're huge.
Well, and they deservedly mad.
They're looking to take it out on someone here. Let them take it out on Canada. All right. So this weekend, you had said, I mean, on your weather forecast, not just the latest one, but the other ones as well, that these things are being changed because, you know, it looks like we're getting precipitation, then it is moving northward.
Yeah.
You know, and things are staying drier, staying warmer. Is that going to continue through this weekend?
Yeah, you know, until this upper level low starts moving again, and the models are sure that it's moving the right way, things are kind of all over the place. So I wrote about this today in my on my website, that if you see rain in a particular part of the forecast and you're worried because you got something going on, just wait. Don't fret just yet, because it might very well change again. Saturday night has been a particular time frame where earlier in the week it looked promising for some good rain here. And then a couple days ago, or not even a couple days ago, yesterday, it looked like more of a northern Minnesota event. Well, now it's coming back south again. So we'll probably see some rain Saturday night, but I think we'll be on the southern edge of anything really significant. So we're talking probably under a half inch, and it does look to be confined to the overnight hours Saturday night. Otherwise, tomorrow, just an isolated shower or two. This is just sort of remnant moisture. We're on the northern edge of the cloud cover and the moisture from that upper level low we talked about yesterday and today. And then next week, there's a system Monday, Tuesday that was aimed right at us yesterday, now looks to be taking more of a track to the south, southeast into Iowa, Wisconsin. We'll have to keep our eye on that. They may very well wobble north again. So there are systems around in the next week, three good rain systems to keep our eye on. But yeah, no guarantees. The tracks keep changing, so stay tuned. And obviously that affects temperatures if we're cloudier or wetter compared to drier and brighter. But overall, the pattern continues to be mild. It looks like after Sunday, we may be done with the 70s for at least a while, though I don't rule them out. Remember, we had a week of 70s in November last year after a blizzard. but it looks like, you know, what's kind of bizarre again is this consistent heat. So we're not seeing these extremes like you normally would, especially in a month like October, but we're consistently 5 to 10 degrees above normal. Well, by next week, the normal high slips to 59, 60 degrees by the end of the week. What's 5 to 10 degrees above that? 64 to 69 degrees. And sure enough, that looks like what the temperatures are like next week. So we slip below that 70 threshold. So cooler next week, but still way above averages. There are some indications models do seem to be in agreement that by next weekend, that 16th, 17th time frame, we might see some legit chilly air. But again, by that point, high of around 50 is only about 5 degrees below normal. But, you know, I know people are like, when can I use my sweater? Maybe next weekend.
Maybe. Obviously, you need to stay tuned on the weather. Forecastissold.com/weather. Forecastissold.com/weather. Bringmethenews.com and also at YouTube. Sven Sundgaard. Sven, thank you very much. I appreciate the information, my friend.
You bet. Stay tuned for my weather video tomorrow, and we'll see if these rain chances move around again.
Indeed. Sven Sundgaard, kind enough to join us. We'll take a break, wrap up the show when we return. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I'll tell you what, that is the weirdest part of the weather right now. In my mind is the fact that none of this is normal. I mean, none of this is normal. I mean, this is, you know, waking up and going walking my dog on October 7th. It's pitch black outside. It's 64 degrees. 64 degrees this morning. And it didn't really, clouds kind of kept us, it didn't warm up like a summer day, but, you know, I don't know what else we need to see to say to ourselves, everything is broken right now when it comes to the weather. I'm stunned that the low pressure system is moving westbound is more common than I think. I saw that. I was like, uh-oh. Okay. Isn't this the beginning scene of every environmental disaster film that we've ever seen? Wow. I've never seen that happen. It's tornadoes in Los Angeles. Wow. It's raining like crazy in Italy. Wow. Who knew? Uh-oh. Oh, God. But of course, once again, it's easy to dismiss climate change by it's like, so it's a little warmer, Matt. What's the big deal? I don't think this is a problem. And all of a sudden, it's like, what do you mean there's no more moose there? All the pine trees are dying. There's no birch trees anymore in Minnesota. Yeah. We've got to have real leadership on this. We got to save this stuff. And the reality is right now the Republican Party are still just, give me money, fossil fuel industry, and I'll make sure nothing ever changes. I'm wearing that complete and total disregard for Mother Earth like you like me to. Oh. That's the most disturbing adult film I've ever heard. If we don't start fixing this, man, we need, oh God, we're not going to be able, I guess to the coal and the gas industry, they think they're going to be able to shoot themselves into space. I guess they must have beachfront property up in northern Canada. I guess that's where they think they're going to be able to survive. Native Rich Radio, that's coming up next. Have a good one. We're back on a Friday. Till then, see ya.